Thanks very much. I'm going to talk today about the Jewish engagement with multiculturalism and how it's developed over the last few decades. What I'm saying is I'm going to be drawing on a book that I co-wrote with Ben Gidley, also with Ben Gidley, that came out in 2010 called Turbulent Times of the British Jewish Community Today. And I'm also going to add to what we argue there a little bit as well. I'm very grateful to be on the same panel as Nassar and Huayan for giving us some quite interesting surveys of multiculturalism, both the concept, both the category and the term, as Nassar would talk about it. I'm going to use the term multiculturalism in this short talk, and I won't always explain it. And I know that that's unsatisfactory to a certain extent, but just as the term anti-Semitism is unsatisfactory, sometimes you need these terms in order to go on. And simply to have any kind of conversation at all without being derailed by definitional issues. Broadly speaking, our argument in Turbulent Times is that Jews adapted late to multiculturalism, in the sense that the Jewish community in Britain has been here since the 17th century. It expanded rapidly in the last years of the 19th century, the early years of the 20th century. And by the time that the majority of British Jews came to this country, which is now really at least a century ago for the majority of them, although not all of them, Britain was not a multicultural country. Now, it's important to qualify that, as David Feldman did when he spoke on a panel with us when we launched the book, saying that, well, that doesn't mean we were necessarily a monocultural Britain either. In fact, multicultural and monocultural don't really describe adequately what Britain has been like historically. There's always been, on top of the fact that Britain is an amalgam of England, Scotland, Ireland for a lot of the time, and Wales, which, of course, is in a very complex relationship both to England and to Britain as a whole. There has always been, or at least there has been since the 19th century, at least some space for faith diversity in Britain. Now, but all that being said, I think it's true to say that until quite recently, the British Jewish community, or at least its leadership, or a majority of its leadership, was predicated on an assumption that Britain was a monocultural society to which Jews were a minority. We say in the book that the dominant strategy followed by the British Jewish communal leadership, particularly organisations such as the Board of Deputies and the Chief Rabbinate, was what we call a strategy of security. That was, in the dominant communal discourse, Jewish leaders tried to demonstrate to British society as a whole that we were loyal British citizens, and tried to urge British Jews themselves to be loyal British citizens, to be Jewish privately, and to be British citizens publicly, or English citizens publicly. Of course, the slippage between England and Britain is quite an interesting one, but we'll save that discussion for another day. And this strategy of security required that Jews be, if not invisible in the public sphere, then at least not assertive within the public sphere. The dominant political strategy in Anglo-Jewish history has been one whereby Jews have won various civil and citizenship rights through quiet, behind-the-scenes negotiations, outsourced, if you like, to the communal, the grandees of the community. Now, this was an apparently quote-unquote successful strategy, in the sense that in the post-war period, the majority of British Jews, although by no means all, became upwardly mobile, ceased living, majority of them ceased living in poorer neighborhoods such as the East End, moving out to suburban areas and living largely middle class lives. Now, it's, Jews have never been, even today, they are not homogeneously middle class, but nonetheless, that is still the case with the majority. Now, this sense of a comfortable, settled, non-assertive community, largely middle class, became problematic when multiculturalism became an important discourse and also a fact of British society from the 50s and 60s onwards. The minorities that settled in Britain from the 50s and 60s onwards were less, not all of them, but many of them were less inclined to follow this kind of strategy of security, to be politically quiescent, to be invisible in the public sphere. And of course, a lot of them had no choice but to be this way. If you were black or Asian, it is much, you are much more identifiable. Therefore, you often face significant racism, which isn't to say that British Jews haven't faced anti-Semitism, but British Jews have been able to pass into British society much more effectively than other groups have become. Now, in this sort of, as it developed in the 60s and in the 70s, and Britain started to make this transition to an officially multicultural society, then a lot of elite Jewish discourse started to look a little bit anachronistic. And I'm going to show a quote here from the chief rabbi, Lord Emanuel Jacobowitz, who was chief rabbi until 1990-1991. And he wrote a response to the Church of England's Faith in the City report in 1996. Which was a very strongly worded, basically a defense of Thatcherite policies, but also a critique of multiculturalism. And here are a few extracts. On arriving here, we, that's the Jews, had cultivated trust in and respect for the police, realizing that our security as a minority depended on law and order being maintained. And so, unlike Afro-Caribbeans, we did not riot. We were quite content for Britain to remain ethnocentrically British. Jews at the time were content to be patient, to wait and struggle for several generations to attain their social objectives, whereas we now live in an impatient age demanding instant solutions. It may be salutary to remind those presently enduring much hardship and despair that others have faced similar trials before them, and that self-reliant efforts and perseverance eventually pay off. Now, this is, you could not get a better statement of the idea that Jews represent a model minority, and of course a really quite explicit critique of other minorities, particularly at the time the black community. Needless to say, in terms of as an analysis of Anglo-Jewish history, it is at best incomplete and at worst complete cobblers, in the sense that whilst it's certainly true that what Jacobowitz is saying is what a large section of the Anglo-Jewish communal leadership was saying, be patient, be quiet, struggle, keep your heads down, there were large sections of British Jewry that did not act like this. There was, of course, in the East End in the pre-war period, there was massive Jewish involvement in radical politics, in trade unionism, in anti-fascist activity, and so on. And I think what's interesting here is that this report really represents a late flowering of what really had become by then, by 1986, a pretty anachronistic strategy. And it was a strategy that was starting to fail for all sorts of reasons. Now, when the new chief rabbi, Jonathan Sacks, was inducted in 1991, he articulated what was ostensibly quite a different kind of discourse. And this was based on an analysis of Anglo-Jewry, that the strategy of security I mean, it was not put in those terms, obviously, was causing British Jews, had caused British Jews to become too comfortable. They pointed to, people like Sachs pointed to demographic research, suggesting that the size of the Anglo-Jewish community had fallen dramatically from maybe about 450,000 in the immediate post-war period to around 330,000-350,000 in the late 80s. The numbers are actually disputed, but and of course this apparent disappearance was seen as being partly to do with intermarriage, and although there were never exact figures at the time, but in 1990 a report had come out in America suggesting that the intermarriage rate was about 50%, and that was seen to probably apply to Britain as well. It was seen to be as a result of intermarriage, but also to do with assimilation. So this sort of pinpointing of the problems of this strategy of security led to what we call a strategy of insecurity being articulated, in which doom-laden prognostications of the future of Anglo-Jewry were routinely made in the 1990s, both by Sachs and by other Jewish leaders, saying that we are disappearing, we are going to die as a community, and that we have to do something about it. And this led to a significant period of institutional innovation to try and resist what was known as a continuity crisis. I won't go into all the highways and byways through which this institutional change happened. But within about 10 or 20 years, there had been some significant changes in Anglo-Jewry in a number of respects. In one respect, British Jewish organisations professionalised, became more efficient, became slicker in what they did, or at least attempted to be. Jewish schools, Jewish education was seen as a priority, and massive investment was put into Jewish schooling to the extent that the percentage of British Jewish children attending Jewish schools, I didn't bring the statistics, I should have, shot up to where now in 2012 the majority of primary aged children at least do attend Jewish schools, and new Jewish schools are opening all the time. Again, whether this was actually an appropriate response or not, I'll leave to one side. I think what's important is to suggest that this was an explicit and highly concerted attempt to turn back the tide, to create a more educated, involved British Jewish community that would be less likely to assimilate, that would be less likely to disappear. Another strand of this was a greater public visibility of Judaism. One example of that was the under Ken Livingstone's mayorship. For 2 years in a row, there was something called Simcha on the Square, which was basically a big celebration of Jewishness in Trafalgar Square, which is the sort of thing that was very rare, if not actually non-existent in previous generations of British Jewry, to publicly celebrate Judaism like that in the way that other minorities might do. All of this, I suggests constitutes a kind of cautious embrace of multiculturalism. Not necessarily multiculturalist discourse in its entirety, but a sense that British Jews needed to do what other minorities do, to be assertive in the public sphere, to celebrate their own identity, and to work hard to ensure that they did not disappear into British society. One articulation of this is, I've got how much, 5 minutes? I'm not going to read it all, Jonathan Sachs's book, The Dignity of Difference, which came out in 2003, which was a fairly impassioned critique of what Sachs called Platonic Universalism and a celebration of difference. Now, this isn't a celebration of difference in the sense that sort of radical theorists or sociologists of ethnicity talk about, but is nonetheless was quite noteworthy, and it's very difficult to imagine that Lord Jacobowitz would have done that. He says, for example, pluralism is a form of hope because it's founded in the understanding that precisely because we are different, each of us has something unique to contribute to the shared project of which we are part. Now, there are a couple of massive paradoxes in Jonathan Sacks's embrace of difference and pluralism that reflect wider issues and views in the Jewish community, a wider paradoxy. One of which was probably the most important one was that whilst Sacks celebrated pluralism in British society, generally he did not celebrate pluralism in the British Jewish community itself. He was ultimately the chief rabbi of the United Synagogue. He did not see Reform Judaism as legitimate. And within the Jewish community, he advocated what he called inclusivism, but not pluralism, which, as he understood it, meant embracing individual Jews while not legitimating their particular denominations. And if I had more time, I could go into the sort of the horrible knot that Sacks himself got tied up with because of this and the impossible contradictions of his position. But I think what's interesting about this is that this paradox reflects an issue within multiculturalism itself, in that sort of most multiculturalist theory doesn't have very much to say about what happens within communities itself. And in cruder versions of multiculturalism, you have a sense in which a picture of homogeneous communities forming part of a monocultural Britain with sort of a unified leadership representing them in a public sphere. I'm not saying academics necessarily advocate that kind of multiculturalism, but in its cruder versions, that often what happens. The second paradox is that this increase in public, confident, multiculturalist Judaism went alongside a public embrace by much of the Jewish leadership, including Sacks, of the idea of the new anti-Semitism, which was an idea that grew from 2000, 2001, which was that a new anti-Semitism was rising in British society, in which Jews were attacked not so much for being racially or religiously different, so much as for being Zionists, for being supporters of Israel. Anti-Zionism, anti-Semitism disguised as anti-Zionism, that kind of thing. Sacks himself talked about a tsunami of anti-Semitism. British Jewish leaders would talk publicly and strongly about the new anti-Semitism and would, in a way that earlier generations of Jewish leaders would simply not have done. In the 1930s, the Board of Deputies was officially against, for example, the action on Cable Street against the British Union of Fascists, counselling again quiet patience behind the scenes negotiation rather than officially articulating grievances. And of course, this new anti-Semitism discourse is, in a way, the apotheosis of the multiculturalist moment in the Jewish community, in the sense that in multiculturalism, different minorities feel comfortable in articulating grievances within the public sphere. Now, that isn't to make a judgment, again, on whether new anti-Semitism theory is right or wrong, simply that it's a sign of multiculturalist adaption. Now, more recently, Sacks himself has critiqued multiculturalism. In fact, he's been one of the people that have been part of the backlash that both Humayun and Nassar were talking about. He said in his book, The Home We Build Together, multiculturalism has run its course and it is time to move on. And instead of that, he talks about society as a home that we build together. Because we are different, each of us has something unique to contribute. Now, it was interesting hearing what Nazar was saying, is the sense that often this public repudiation of multiculturalism often goes alongside essentially multiculturalist policy making. And to some extent, but only to some extent, if you actually read Sacks's book, that the home we build together was essentially a zombie multiculturalist's critique of multiculturalism, in the sense that he did not repudiate his sense that difference was something to be valued. Now, that isn't to say that his critique of multiculturalism is necessarily a fair one. But what it is a critique of multiculturalism. It is not simply a return to the past. It is not simply a return to the sort of thing that Jacobowitz was saying, that is that we are a model minority and other minorities should keep their head down. It was a much more sophisticated than that, even though in some respects it is highly reactionary. Just to finish, I focused here because we haven't had much time on Sachs, but obviously I could have said much more about other leaders and other thinkers in the Jewish community. But I think what Jonathan Sachs's work shows is some of the contradictions, anxieties and paradoxes that reveal tensions and problems within multiculturalism, however you define it. I'll just briefly outline three. One is that, as I said before, multiculturalism, in whatever version you talk about, has been poor in dealing with questions about internal diversity, internal pluralism. Second of all, multiculturalism, in whatever form you talk about, has not dealt well with questions of continuity and questions of cultural survival, particularly those versions of multiculturalism that celebrate hybridity have not dealt very well with anxieties amongst minorities that they will disappear in a hybrid future. And thirdly, and this really to an extent this echoes what Nassar and Humir have been saying, is that multiculturalism, the brand multiculturalism, has kind of become toxic. It's become associated with a particular crude version of multiculturalism, which may or may not ever have been explicitly articulated, but is sometimes the way that multiculturalism has worked in practice. And this leads to a fairly polarized and often quite shrill debate, which actually hides the substantial commonalities between people's positions. I'll stop there. Thanks.
Thank you.